Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
To talk about the Indiana side of things, we have to go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast. He covers all things professional basketball in Indianapolis. The great Tony East joins us now. Tony, welcome to the show.
Happy to be one of the only people probably on this show the last couple weeks not talking about Sanders or the NFL draft. This should be fun.
I mean, if you have any of those takes, we will.
Yeah, we will take them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, like, super into the NFL, but I was locked in on that. I thought it was such a fascinating story. So I did find it interesting. I'll give credit to the storyline for being compelling.
I actually like you not being that into the NFL. It's going to up your NBA credibility with us here today, Tony, because we need someone that'll just be like, eh, who cares about the juggernaut that is football? I do hoops and hoops only.
Yeah, like if when like football rolls around in September, you're like, they still do that? That makes you all the more valuable to us as a basketball guest.
I keep up. I went to Indiana University, so I keep up with IU football. They're finally good. Every once in a while, I'll see what the Colts are doing because they're here. But yeah, since Peyton Manning left, I haven't really followed the NFL that hard.
Fernando Mendoza is going to be the number one pick for the Cleveland Browns next year. Get ready, and then we'll have you on to talk Fernando Mendoza.
I like that you just chuckled at that, not acknowledging you know anything about that player that Nick just mentioned that's going to be your quarterback next year. I like that.
I'm assuming this is a QB joke because it's the Browns team, so I can get a chuckle at that.
Good basketball guest. I like this.
Remember who told you about Fernando Mendoza coming up in a couple months here. So, looking to the Pacers side of things, who are the Pacers? What are, when the Pacers are at their best, who are they?
Yeah, they kind of play like the Cavs in terms of the fact that their identity at their best is being a very good offensive team. You know, the first best offense in the playoffs so far is the Cavs. The second best is the Pacers. Last year, the top offense in the NBA during the playoffs was the Pacers. They scored easily against everybody. Even in the series they lost to the Celtics, they got swept. Joe Mazzulla said, like, yeah, that was our hardest series. Like, guarding them is really hard. The way they play is really tough to contain. And so this season, the reason they're the fourth seed is they started really slow. Tyrese Haliburton started slow. They weren't the team that everybody thought they would be. But once he got into gear, they've been spectacular. They have a top five record since, you know, early December. And when they get rolling on that end of the floor, they're just so hard to stop. The Bucks had about one half of success playing defense against this Pacers team. Now, they don't have the offensive ceiling that Cleveland has, but the fact that they have that level of scoring ability and a capable defense, they finished 14th, I think, in defensive rating this season, is how they got this far with a team that, you know, no one considers having any kind of superstar-level talents, but they play very well together and they play an offensive style that's really tough to guard. It's gotten them through lots of series.
Yeah, it feels like anyone we talk to in relation to the Pacers, they just want to tell us about this, like, I don't know, was it a flipping of the switch or how different this team has been over the past couple months? What happened there?
Yeah, the bigger part of the story is that Tyrese Haliburton's start to the season was bad. Like, he would tell you that himself. He couldn't make threes. His assist numbers were down. He couldn't get in the paint. He described it as, like, not losing joy for basketball, but he needed to recapture it. You know, we've heard that quote a lot from players who are really slumping. Like, it just kills them mentally. So that was part of it. The other part of it is they were really injured. Like, it was their only stretch of the season where they dealt with significant absences. As soon as they got Andrew Nembhard and Ben Shepherd back from injury, their defense really picked up. And, you know, the Cavs are like this too. Like, when the Pacers get in transition, they're just lethal. They're so hard to stop. And so getting defensive players back and Haliburton sort of recapturing his form at the same time, they just took off out of nowhere and they were beating everybody. I mean, they had that game against the Cavs in Cleveland that I still think many people in your area would call that the worst game the Cavs played the entire season, probably. I think they scored 93 points or something that night, and the Cavs kicked the Pacers' butts two nights later. But, you know, that still was a game that happened, and, like, they were rolling to that level through a lot of December and January. The only reason people bring it up so much is, yes, I think that the 4 or 3 seed's probably where the Pacers belong, but their record and their general profile isn't really reflective of the team that they've been for the last, like, 6 months now of time. They're a better team than the numbers suggest, even if they're not quite maybe in that elite tier of groups yet.
Tony, when it comes to Tyrese Haliburton, is it better to focus on shutting down Tyrese the playmaker, where he helps everybody else out, or trying to shut down Tyrese the scorer?
Yeah, most teams go the route of Tyrese the scorer when he's at his worst, I would say. But that's not even, like, the perfect way to put it. Like, he loves to get in the paint, regardless of if he's going to be finishing his own shot with a floater or a layup, or if he's going to be distributing. He calls it paint to great in terms of great shots. That's what the Pacers coaching staff calls it too. The absolute best defenses against the Pacers, for whatever reason, whatever their scheme is, if it's a good zone, if it's really good switching, two things the Cavs do well that keep him out of the paint, or, like, keep him elbows and out, that's when he's at his worst. And he has a lethal kind of step back three, but he doesn't like going to that all the time. He wants to get a better shot than that if he can, working through the reads of a possession. So the second half of Pacers Bucks game three, the Bucks switched almost everything. The Pacers were moving side to side too much. They got awful shots. They got run out of the gym that night. They lost by almost 20 points. You know, the zone defenses have at times given the Pacers fits. Even the Cavs, the second half of the game, they beat the Pacers when both teams were actually trying. They ran the Pacers out of the building, albeit without Haliburton, with a zone and with switching defenses. So that's how most teams try to do it. It isn't necessarily about taking away one thing or the other, but of those two, it's more about the scoring aspect. I think the Pacers went 22-3 this season when Haliburton had over 20 points in a game. Like, if you shut off his water, you're forcing other guys to beat you. But he is so naturally pass first that cutting off his scoring and cutting off his ways of getting to the cup is also cutting off his distributing in a lot of ways.
Help us settle a debate then. Where do you rank the top 5 players in this series? Who are those players, and use them in the 1-5 order for us?
Yeah, I mean, you guys could rank the Cavs players better than me. I mean, I've thought at times Mobley was their best player this season. At the start of the year, it was Garland. So I would probably say Mitchell, Mobley 1-2, Haliburton 3, and then 4-5 is some order, Garland, Siakam. Does that seem unfair to you guys at a quick glance?
No, it sounded right to me.
Yeah, I probably would have had Garland 3rd and then Haliburton 4th.
Yeah, Nick thinks Garland's a better player than Haliburton. Is he right or wrong there?
Well, honestly, it took me forever to – Garland's start to the season was so good that it took me a long time to actually admit that, like, Mitchell was having a better season than Garland for myself. I know that's wrong now, especially because, you know, like, game – I think it was game one of Cavs Heat, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, Mitchell turned it up and he was just the best player. Like, Garland was amazing to start this season, man. Like, when he's at his best, he's such a beast. So, yeah, I'm okay with hearing that take out. And, you know, last year, I'd run a lot of queries of guys who had similar passing and three-point shooting numbers to Haliburton, like in NBA history. And Garland's All-Star season made the cut. Like, he was amazing that year, too, and that was 2 years ago. He is, I think, one of the more underrated players in the league, especially now that he has a working jaw and can actually, like, catch a basketball and stuff.
Yeah, so Garland's apex is All-Star season. That's the cure that came up the closest.
All I heard was he's got a working jaw. And
Tony, you're
100%
you're too
right.
Nice. Tony, you're too nice.
Tony, looking to Tyrese Haliburton again, were you surprised that he was voted by NBA players one of the most overrated and disliked players in the NBA?
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
So to be clear, I don't think that the results of that poll are wrong, but I 100% get why players think that. When players talk about, like, what makes other players good, they all talk about like a bag, both in terms of money and like a package of skill moves that make them hard to guard. That's not how Tyrese Haliburton scores. Like, he just crosses over a few times and gets to his shot, or, you know, makes threes, and he is a max contract player. Like, a lot of guys view players they think are overpaid as overrated too. Around the league, like, every year, it seems like a max player who is playing bad that year wins that poll. Rudy Gobert is always a mainstay up at the top. So that's part of it. He was probably the worst player on the gold medal team, right, that just happened last summer, I think almost certainly. And he started the season quite terribly, like 15 to 20 games of just like, is this guy even starter level player right now. And I think all that together is just a lot of ammo for people who already, for whatever reason, didn't like him, to be like, yeah, he's overrated. Like, he isn't actually that good. And he's got this goofy jumper form. To be clear, I think he's probably a teensy bit underrated on the whole. Like, nobody can pass and shoot like him in the league except for Garland and Trae Young, basically. And he does it at a higher volume than both of those guys, both because of their teammates' quality and situation and because he's a really good player. And that's why the Pacers are good, is because of the style that he allows them to execute and play. So I totally get why he led that poll. Like, I get it. I get why players feel that way. I just think that they're wrong.
How do the Pacers snipe a couple games from the Cavs? Like, what happens in your mind? What's the formula? What does the box score look like in order to have that happen?
Yeah, they generated a ton of good shots against the Bucks. Like, one of every three possessions, the league does their, like, how open was a shot tracking, and the Pacers led the first round in generating wide open shots. And the only reason that's relevant to this series is because if they can do that, not to that level, because the Cavs will be better than the Bucks, but at a decently high level, there will be games where their role players just make shots, right? If they're wide open, they'll go in. At times, Aaron Nesmith, Andrew Nembhard, those guys can hit shots. Miles Turner's been good against the Cavs a lot. You know, I think that's one way that they would steal a game or two, is even just a normal game for both teams in terms of playing the way they want, like nothing goofy going on. The Pacers can just make enough of their good looks to actually win. And, you know, I think they defended the Cavs pretty well this season. They have actual size in their front court, like up and down the roster, with Obi Toppin, Miles Turner, Pascal Siakam. Maybe Thomas Bryant plays in the series. Maybe Jairus Walker plays in the series to not be good at stopping Mobley and Allen. Nobody can really do that, but at least be enough of a thorn in their side to make things challenging in a way that there's no way the Cavs just, like, have a dominant this matchup, go to this every single time bucket kind of thing. And so I think there will be a game, maybe even two, that the Pacers can just win on. I hate this term. I think it's a too dorky way of describing it, but shooting variance, for lack of a better term. And, you know, that helped them against. They survived a Gary Trent shooting variance game in game five, but they shot well a lot in that series because they generated wide open shots. If the Cavs defense is awesome, maybe that won't happen. But if the Pacers find a way to keep generating the shots that they like, which they've been good at for two straight years now, they'll certainly give themselves a chance to win one, if not multiple games in this series.
So what is your official prediction for this series?
Yeah, I said Cavs in six when people have asked me. I think that they're similar teams in terms of their profiles. I mentioned that at the start, but the Cavs are just kind of better at most of the things. You know, their defensive level's higher. Their front court defense with Mobley and Allen, I think, is going to end up being the difference in this series. You know, the Pacers have size, but not that level of defensive talent on the floor. And Jared Allen's finishing is just insane. I think I just read or saw that he had more more steals than missed shots in the first round. Like, that doesn't even make sense at the center. That's crazy. So I think the Cavs have lots of advantages to lean on. Obviously, their backcourt combos are amazing, and they'll match up well enough that there's not going to be anything that is really scary to them. I think the Pacers, as they showed last year when they beat the Knicks and played the Celtics tough, they can beat anybody at their best, but this Cavs' best is just better.
All right, you almost made it out of an interview without answering anything about Haliburton Sr. Has he always been that way, or was that just a one-off? What happened there?
No, I don't. He's never done anything like that. He is very proud of his son. Like, he's at a lot of games, certainly, and sits in that same spot all the time. But that was something I've never seen him do that. And I get that it was an intense series with, like, probably the most yapping between players I've seen in a five-game set in my life, in my time covering the Pacers. And I get that he was very emotional in that exact moment because his son just scored 5 points in 17 seconds to steal a miraculous playoff game. But, I mean, you can't do that, right? And Tyrese acknowledged it immediately after the game. I think it's the right move to just have him be away for a while and deal with it later. But, yeah, I've never seen him do anything like that, even though, you know, in talking to him in the past, like, he is very proud of his son and his family's at a lot of games because they're a very close-knit group. And I think it just, in one moment of rush of emotions, got way too out of hand.
Between Tyrese's dad and Giannis, who do you think would have won in a fight?
How about a hundred of Tyrese's dad versus Giannis?
This is the gorilla man debate. It's a 100 John Haliburtons versus one Giannis Antetokounmpo. Is that fair?
The only way to make it fair.
I don't know. Maybe like three John Haliburtons. I think we're giving Giannis a little credit.
Giannis would have ate him like a
snack. He's very naturally nice.
He would have ate him like a snack.
Tony, we appreciate you, buddy. Nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Tony East, and I did it again, damn it. Tony East of the Locked On Pacers podcast on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline will react to what he had to say about this Cavs. It brought up Not to go full Lima. It brought up a theory that I have. When people do series predictions, that's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.